Okay, welcome. Isaiah chapter 12 is the Old Testament lesson for Lent 4. By the way, we've got welcome to a new term. For those who are listening on email or on the internet, we had a two-week hiatus while we were on break. So if you were looking for Lent 2 and 3, here we are with 4. I'd also announce, and perhaps they're actually hearing these words on internet delay or something, but we received word that lectionary at lunch is being downloaded and used by Bible students in Kazakhstan, literally halfway around the world. There are 12 hours and time zones different from us, so we welcome you if you're hearing us in Kazakhstan, and extend greetings in the name of our Lord to you as well. Wish you God's blessings in your study of His Word. Isaiah chapter 12 is a song of joy. This is a beautiful little canticle at the end of this section of Isaiah, usually 1 to 12. I think 2 to 12 is really the subsection, and brings to conclusion themes that are being raised throughout these chapters. We don't have time today to go back and pick all of that up, but this theme of the anger of Yahweh not being turned away is the refrain of the poem that you have in Isaiah chapter 9, verses 7 or 8 and following, and that runs through 10:4. That's there are four stanzas there. Each one ends with the anger of the Lord is not returned, His hand is still stretched out. And that picks up a theme also in chapter 5, where there are two more references to the anger of the Lord not returning, which makes a total of 6, and here in chapter 12 we have the 7th reference to the anger of the Lord returning. So you have to read this a little bit in context with all of 2 to 12, which focuses on the Syro-Ephraimite war, the threat to Judah, the consternation of King Ahaz in what to do about it, and the sign of Emmanuel in chapter 7:14, which is right smack dab in the heart of it all. How about that? Second introductory point, this is Laetare Sunday. If you go back to the old hymnal, when we still had Latin names and themes for the Sundays in Lent, they were named, they weren't just Lent 4. This is the Joy Sunday, and you have themes of rejoicing here. It's kind of like the third Sunday in Advent when you light the pink candle, and sort of liturgically we say 4 weeks of Advent, a little too heavy, let's make one a little more joyful. 6 weeks of Lent gets a little heavy here the fourth week. We take a little bit of a breather. It's subdued joy, but it's the Joy Sunday. And I wonder, Jeff, if this doesn't connect up to the prodigal son, that the theme of joy is really joy focused on the returning home of God's people, of God's judgment being turned away, or as we might put it in the Lenten theme, God's judgment being turned away from us to the Savior who bears that punishment and judgment in our place. Isaiah chapter 12, Va'amarta b'yom ha'hu, and you will say in that day. Now before we get too far, note the structure of this chapter. Go down to verse 4, and what do you see? Verse 1 starts, Va'amarta b'yom ha'hu. Verse 4 starts, Va'amartem b'yom ha'hu. What's obviously the same, but what's different? The amarta in verse 1 is second person singular, or masculine singular. In verse 4, it's plural. You'll never see this in English, of course, where those distinctions get lost. So you have, first of all, the sort of joyful song of a singular person, then you have the expressed joy of the community. And that combination, that sometimes a tension that needs to be resolved between the personal and the corporate, is an important tension to keep in proper balance in biblical theology. That's the difference between being Protestant and being Catholic. And Lutherans are both. Or in a sense, neither. Better both. We are individual and also corporate. You will say in that day, O Dekah Yahweh, I will yada you. Hifil form, first yod, third hey. Both are gone, where the yod's changed to a wow, remember? Yada means to give thanks or praise. I will give thanks you. I will thank you. O Yahweh. Yahweh must be vocative. Ki anafta vi. You were mad. Anaf means to be mad. The nun gets squeezed out in the noun af, which means anger, and actually comes from the red nose on your face, that old expression of your nose burning being the idiom for kind of red in the face, mad. Here's just the full form with the nun, unassimilated. Anaf as a verb means to be angry. For you were angry in me, literally, v. Yashov afaka. Now here, check the commentaries and the translations. Yashov, if you parse it, is not imperfect, not preterite, i.e. past tense, but really technically jussive. Let your anger turn away, and may you comfort me. You could defend that translation, and a lot hinges on it. In other words, from the perspective of this text, is the anger still there, and the prayer is that it would be turned away? Or has it happened yet? And I think most English translations sort of just naturally fall into the perfect here for a semi-defensible reason, but it's not the only translational. I would argue that this is still a prayer. Now, from Isaiah's perspective, he's still wondering how this is going to play out, and Ahaz has certainly played all of his cards wrong in chapter 7 and 8, and Isaiah's kind of hoping that somehow God's going to make this thing turn out all right. Hine, 2. Hine El Yeshuati, the God of my salvation. This is sort of praying back to God. Behold, the God of my salvation. You'd almost have to say, you are. Eftach, I will batach, trust, and not pakad, fear, dread. Pakad's pretty strong fear, dread. I will trust and not dread. Ki azi v'zimrat Yahweh v'hili lishua. Because my oz and zimrat Yahweh. Boy, how do you make sense out of this? There's too many words here, too many Yahwehs. First thing, this is a citation of Exodus 15, the Song of the Sea. The first Yah is from Exodus 15. I think this is kind of a quote within the prayer to Yahweh. And Isaiah is simply quoting Exodus 15 as a way of saying, God, I'm quoting back the words that we've already celebrated when you won the victory at the sea as a reminder of who you are, what you have done, and the fact that we remember these things. So you could put this in a subquote. For, Yahweh, remember, my strength and my song is Yahweh, and he has become my salvation. And then the extra Yahweh is really outside those quotes and evocative, see? So it's a little awkward. Behold, the God of my salvation, I will trust and not be afraid. For, now Yahweh, here's the point, see? Remember what we've sung, quote, my strength and my song is Yahweh, and he has become my salvation. By the way, there's a little bit of literature on this word Zimrath, which is always translated song, but is probably in Exodus 15, early poetry, not yet the word for song and the word for strength. There's an Amorite god in the second millennium, or in the Middle Bronze Age, called Zimri Lim. It means Lim is my Zamar, or strength. And Zamar really means strength, which would be a nice poetic parallel to Uz. It doesn't make sense to put Uz and song together, but Uz means strength and Zimrath means strength. But it's become the word for song, and the word Zamar means to sing. So you have sort of a frozen meaning here, a frozen archaic meaning that usually gets lost in translation. Well, that's not a big deal, but... Okay, 3. And y'all, Now look how the first half of this poem already introduces and anticipates the second person plural. And you all will draw mayim, water, in joy. Sason, one of the strong words for just kind of let her rip joy, huh? Happiness. From the ma'ane, the well springs, this is not a dug well, but a well spring of Yeshua, of salvation. Nice use of the word Yeshua here. It's almost an echo. Four, let's go on. Now, by the way, verses 1 to 3 have 72 syllables. Verses 4 to 6, anyone want to take a wild guess? 72 syllables. Yeah, these are the two halves of this thing are exactly the same length. 4, and y'all will say in that day, Hodu. Now it's not I will praise, Odeka, which is what we had in 1b, but Hodu, the imperative, plural masculine imperative, same yada, verb, give praise to Yahweh, kir'u bishmi, bishmo, cry out in his name, kara in his shame, name. See it? Pronominal suffix, shmo, his name. This is idiom for invoke his name, call it out as the name worthy of worship and prayer. Call out in his name, hodi'u, Hifil of Yada, first Yod, cause to know, make known. Make known ba'amim alilothau. Make known in or among the amim, the peoples. These are the goyim. This is everybody outside Israel. So here's we give worship and praise as a witness to those outside the kingdom, you see. Make known among the nations, the amim, the peoples, his alil, alilas, his work, deeds. Another word for works or deeds. Hazkiru, hifil, imperative, the hey with the a vowel, remember, imperative. Cause to remember, cause, now the object isn't here, cause X to remember Y, all right? Cause the peoples to remember his deeds would be sort of the code here, but it's just cause to remember. You could go back to the previous colon and say cause the nation, the peoples, to remember his works. For Nisgav Shemo, his name is sagaved, exalted, nifal, perfect, of a verb sagav, to be high, exalted. Zamru Yahweh, now here you have the verb zamar that clearly means praise, or sing out, probably praise is a piece of that. This is the same zamar I was just talking about before that became the word for song, but probably was originally a word for strength. I don't know if anyone's actually tried to make that work and say it's to sing loudly or something like that, but that reeks too much of etymological hijinks. Sing out to Yahweh, sing, O Yahweh, for, not the Yahweh's invited, sing to Yahweh, because ge'uth, an marvelously, probably a noun, a marvelous thing, asa, he has done. Now you have a form problem. Whatever this, you see this mudath? It's clearly from yada and seems to be a passive participle. The footnote suggests that the yod means it's got to be pu'al if you want it to be passive. The hafal would change the yod to a wow, and that's the way it's pointed. You'll see the dot in the yod, the dagish in the yod. It's not a dagish. It's the dot of the shurek vowel. Reading this as a mater letter wow with that dot in it, which makes it a hafal participle. You with me here? Got this one? Yeah, go look it up. Trust me. Which I think is correct. The Masoret, this is a good Kathiv Karei problem. It's written one way and pointed another, and the only difference is whether the yod should be read as a yod or a wow. All right. Yet that doesn't occur in a P.O. Pu'al. It just doesn't make sense. So it should be a hafal here. So this is something to be caused to know, something like that. Be caused to know. This is the subject, all right? Zoth. This is to be made known, to be caused for someone else to know, or to be made known, b'kol ha'aretz, in all the earth. So the whole line, praise Yahweh, for he has done a marvelous thing. This is to be made known in all the earth. Now you have another shift. Just like the last line of the first half of this little psalm shifted gears, the last line of the second half of the psalm shifts gears to tsa'ali. Now we have an imperative that is singular feminine. And again, you miss all this in English. We shift gears about three or four times in this psalm with these second-person references. Now it's feminine singular. Sa'ali, sing out praises, one of these praise words. Ranan, again in the feminine singular, make a, this is usually translated shout for joy, kind of yee-haw. That's what ranan means, shout for joy. Sing praise, shout for joy, Yoshevet Zion. That's why it's feminine. Yoshevet is the feminine participle. Inhabitant. Now, is this a chronic problem? Is this construct chain or a positive? O inhabitant of Zion, or inhabitant Zion. Zion who dwells on earth. Zion sort of as the singular feminine bride of God who embodies the bride of God living on earth. All right? I would actually prefer reading it as an appositive. O inhabitant Zion, why? And here's the punchline. Ki gadol bekir bay, great in your midst is Kadosh Yisrael, the Holy One of Yisrael. Remember Isaiah chapter 6, where the tris hagion is referenced in Isaiah's vision of the temple. Holy, 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 Yahweh Tzivaoth. And he's a little nervous about a sinner in the presence of the Holy One of Israel. This comes to conclusion because now we can rejoice, because not only in our midst is the Holy One of Israel, but Gadol in our midst is the Holy One of Israel. How is it that the Holy God can take up residence in the midst of sinful people? Or said the other way around, how is it that sinful people can gather for worship and praise in the very presence of the Holy One of Israel, were it not for Lent? Okay, Jeff? Better quit.